From national news in D.C.
to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol,
this is your Capitol Connection.
And now, bringing the Capitol to you,
here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to the program, bringing the Capitol to you every week from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, talking about the issues that matter most, family, freedom, and life. And on today's show, we have got some important updates from the Nebraska legislature on religious freedom, as well as a major victory for our good friend, Jack Phillips, the Colorado cake artist who has been battling for his religious freedom and the rights of all Americans for over 6 years. We've got some good news to share on his case, as well as an important bill to create greater freedom and choice in education for all school children in Nebraska. We have now reached day 39 in this year's legislative session. Things are really picking up down at the state capitol. A lot of intense debate happening, including this past week on a major proposal, LB 627, to create a new category of protected classes for sexual orientation and gender identity. This is a major issue every year, and each time it comes up or has come up for over the last 15 years now, this type of legislation has been rejected, and that was the case again this past week. And here is why that's good news. These laws, they are presented as about being against discrimination, but what we really know is that they're more about silencing dissent and punishing people of faith or no faith at all who hold traditional beliefs on marriage and human sexuality. This bill would force a government-mandated orthodoxy on all of society on issues of deep importance to most Americans and punish people if they disagree. This not only undermines constitutionally guaranteed freedoms, but targets small businesses, harms economic freedom, and threatens women's equality and privacy by requiring sex-specific facilities like women's shelters, locker rooms, restrooms, to admit individuals in accordance with their chosen gender identity rather than biological reality. And so this bill, LB 627, was debated over the course of two mornings this past week down at our state capitol. And there's a rule in place that the legislature abides by where if a piece of legislation has been debated for 3 hours, they will move on. And at that point, it is up to the bill sponsor to demonstrate or show the speaker who sets the agenda that they have or are close to having the 33 required votes in order to pass a bill. So they're trying to save time and not continuing spending hours and hours debating a bill that doesn't have the votes to pass. So again, you need 33 votes out of 49 senators to pass a law if it's being filibustered. And that's the case with this legislation. So it was an intense and heated debate. I think it's unfortunate that every year the rhetoric and the things that are said from the supporters of this bill get more and more outrageous and really disparaging of those who disagree. And it's always interesting to me that those who talk about tolerance the most and who shout down hate the loudest are usually the ones who are promoting the most intolerance and hurtful things towards people who don't share their same beliefs. So again, there was no vote actually taken on the bill itself. It has simply been removed from the agenda after 3 hours of debate and will not come up again this session, effectively defeating the bill for the rest of this year. There was an interesting discussion at the end of the 3 hours. Supporters of the bill and the body tried to force a vote by calling the question and ending debate, but the speaker who was acting and presiding over the legislature ruled that motion was not permissible and that he would not grant them that. And then that led to another motion by supporters of the bill to try and override the chair in order to force that vote. And there was a vote taken on the motion to override the chair, but the body overwhelmingly supported the chair's decision not to cease debate, which was important because there were still a lot of senators waiting to speak on that bill, and it would not have been appropriate to force a vote on the bill at that point and end all debate after only 3 hours. And with this bill, you know, things get really intense because it's very emotional, a lot of passion on both sides. And what was refreshing was that really everyone who spoke against this bill did so with compassion. and really spelled out the practical reasons for opposing this policy, and really emphasized the point that everyone, regardless of where you stand on this issue, fundamentally believes, as we do at Nebraska Family Alliance, that every person should be always be treated with dignity and respect and not suffer unjust discrimination. And that's true. This policy, however, doesn't achieve that, because it in turn allows the government to discriminate against people of faith for peacefully living according to their beliefs. And that's wrong. And this has been demonstrated time and time again in other states and cities that have this same policy. It's been used to use coercion and force out of business private business owners, but even organizations like adopter and foster care providers, homeless women's shelters, religious schools, and even teachers at private schools and churches. And certainly our First Amendment freedom should not be compromised by laws that empower the government to unfairly coerce those with whom it disagrees. And this bill would do so by forcing small business owners to choose between earning a living or operating consistent with their missions and beliefs. Under this same law, Americans who gladly serve all people, including those who identify as LGBT, have been faced with lawsuits, government fines, and even jail time because they declined to participate in an event or create a message that violated their conscience. And this is without even getting to the fact that this really creates untenable situations for employers, businesses, and organizations because of the vagueness of terms and concepts like gender identity, which proponents admit is fluid, and it can vary from day to day. So a person who asserts a gender fluid or non-binary gender identity could initiate costly legal actions against their employer or an organization for everything from simply using the wrong pronoun, which we've seen happen in other states like California, or not allowing the gender fluid person to alternate between male and female restrooms. And this, in turn, is where you get into the issue of women's equality and privacy. For example, when this bill has been enacted in other places, it's been used to force women to share a locker room with men who identify as a woman, and even to allow biological males to sleep alongside biological women in a women's domestic violence shelter. And this is an ongoing case right now in Anchorage, Alaska. The city of Anchorage adopted this policy with a protected class for sexual orientation and gender identity. And city officials in Anchorage are now using that policy to require the Downtown Hope Center, which is a women's homeless shelter that provides a safe place for women who have suffered rape, physical abuse, and domestic violence. And they are being forced under this policy to house biological men alongside the women in its overnight sleeping facilities. And that just goes against common sense. Again, we all agree that everyone should be treated with dignity and respect. And it's a fundamental principle in America that tolerance has to be a two-way street. But this bill would take that away. And it would be the government forcing everyone to agree on an issue that isn't settled and people of good faith who are reasonable and sincere hold different beliefs on. We can agree to disagree without using the heavy hand of government to fine or imprison people for simply trying to live and work according to their sincerely held beliefs. And if you don't think that this could ever happen here, just look right next door in Iowa. Officials in Iowa interpreted their law, which they do have in Iowa, to apply to churches, meaning that churches in Iowa could be prosecuted for operating consistently with their church's doctrines or for simply ensuring that visitors do use sex-specific restrooms and changing areas. So it's really important that people fully understand the consequences and ramifications of this legislation because, as we've seen repeatedly, this law is used not as a shield against discrimination but as a sword against people of faith. And it even includes people who are trying to do good and serve others in their community, like in Philadelphia, where after putting out an urgent call for 300 more foster families, the city of Philadelphia relied on their sexual orientation and gender identity law to shut out Catholic charities because of their nonprofit's commitment to placing children in homes with a mother and a father. And so we're really grateful for the senators who had the courage to speak out against this policy on the floor of the legislature and speak compassionately to why that this bill just simply isn't good policy. And that in a pluralistic and diverse society like ours, we should be able to have respectful dialogue with those who we disagree with without demeaning or shaming other people. There will always be beliefs, always, that are politically unpopular and beliefs that are popular and held by those who are in authority. But our nation has a rich history of protecting those in the minority and those who wish to dissent. And no American should be punished by the government simply for holding a different belief than those in political power. Thankfully, these principles and religious freedom have been upheld with the defeat of this legislation. And interestingly, on this same day, the same day that the legislature defeated LB 627, we got news, really exciting news out of Colorado for Jack Phillips, the Christian cake artist who has been harassed for years by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. This commission in Colorado announced that they were finally abandoning this harassment and dropping their lawsuit against Jack Phillips after he had already won at the United States Supreme Court last year. They came after him again a second time, but they are now dropping that lawsuit. And this announcement is coming in the wake of newly discovered evidence of the state's ongoing hostility toward religious freedom. Alliance Defending Freedom attorneys filed a federal lawsuit and on behalf of Jack Phillips after the state of Colorado began to prosecute him again for a second time after the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling and the first Masterpiece Cake Shop decision. Attorneys for Alliance Defending Freedom explained that the state of Colorado is dismissing its case against Jack, stopping its 6.5 years of hostility towards him for his beliefs. Jack's victory is great news for everyone. Tolerance and respect for good faith differences of opinion are essential in a diverse society like ours. They enable us to peacefully coexist with each other, but the state demonstrated an ongoing hostility toward Jack because of his beliefs. And that's really what this came down to, was government hostility. The fact that one commissioner had called Phillips a hater on Twitter was already publicly known, but a Colorado state legislator recently disclosed that he spoke in November of last year to a current commissioner who expressed the belief that there is, quote, anti-religious bias on the commission. And just last week, attorneys uncovered statements from a public meeting in 2018 in which two commissioners voiced their support for the comments that a previous commissioner had made in 2015. And those comments, which the U.S. Supreme Court sternly condemned in its ruling in favor of Jack Phillips last year, in which they called religious freedom, the commissioner did, called religious freedom a, quote, despicable piece of rhetoric. And they also, at some point, this commissioner had compared Jack Phillips' beliefs to the equivalent of the Holocaust and slavery and all sorts of terrible things. And at a commission meeting in June of last year, the members of the commission openly discussed the United States, the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling against them in favor of Jack Phillips. And during that discussion, one commissioner said, quote, I support Commissioner Diane Rice, who made those previous comments, and I don't think she said anything wrong. Later, another commissioner added, I also very much stand behind Commissioner Rice's statements. I was actually proud of what she said, and I agree with her. I'm almost glad that something the commissioner said ended up public and used because I think it was the right thing. That is the extent to which these people despise this man and what he believes. And thankfully, that hostility and resentment has been brought to light and this prosecution has been dismissed. Jack Phillips' attorney, Kristen Wagner, went on to say, quote, we're pleased that the state will be dismissing its case against Jack. This is the second time the state has launched a failed effort to prosecute him, while it finally appears to be getting the message that its anti-religious hostility has no place in our country. The state's decision to target Jack has cost him more than 6.5 years of his life, forcing him to spend that time tied up in legal proceedings. And I really hope that this really is the end of all this for Jack Phillips. He is stood strong for his faith and for religious freedom for a long time now and taken a tremendous amount of public pressure and harassment in the process. And that's not something that anyone should have to go through. And again, there's been examples of this. First of all, in Colorado, the same commission ruled that a different bakery was not required to make a cake with a message on it supporting traditional marriage. And then there were other cases out of California where someone was seeking a baker to make a pro-President Trump cake, and multiple bakeries refused to make that cake. And they all had the right to do so because it violated their beliefs. It forced them to communicate a message that they didn't want to make. And why would the government force people to create a message that they simply don't want to communicate? Again, this is not about denying people access to basic goods and services. This is about forcing people to participate in an event or promote a message with which they disagree. And that's incredibly un-American, because you might disagree. You might say, you know what, I would have made that cake, or I would have communicated this message or done this differently. But that's what freedom is all about, the ability to choose and decide for yourself. We don't need the government to force people to promote a message or a belief that goes against their conscience. And you certainly shouldn't be punished by your own government for declining to do so. And Jack Phillips got to share his reaction to this decision and again explain what he has been through in an interview he did last week with his attorney, Kristen Wagner from ADF on Fox News. This is what they had to share reacting to this decision. Take a listen.
The state of Colorado and Jack Phillips have agreed to end all litigation. This is the second time the baker claimed he faced anti-religious hostility, most recently for refusing to bake a gender transition cake. And back in 2012, he would not make a wedding cake for a same-sex couple. Jack Phillips is the owner of Masterpiece Cake Shop, and he joins us now with more on this story, along with Kristen Wagner, an attorney at Alliance Defending Freedom. Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you.
Jack, 2 days ago, you're sitting down to write your deposition, and you found out the news that they have dropped their suit.
Yeah.
What went through your mind? This has been 6.5 years in the making.
6.5 years. That was a tremendous win. It was a great victory for us, because for over 25 years at Masterpiece Cake Shop, we've served everybody who comes in our store. We just don't create every message that people ask us to create.
So how are you going to celebrate? You're going to bake a cake for your party?
Yeah, I think that'd be a good idea.
Kristen, what does this mean for you?
Well, it's a great win. 6.5 year hard-fought battle, trip to the Supreme Court. But I think we do need to remember there are government officials in other states mm-hmm. that are continuing to prosecute filmmakers, printers, graphic design artists, hand painters, and they're crushing these people, threatening them even with jail time if they don't express a message that violates their convictions. So no matter what side of the debate you're on, we need to make sure that no American can be forced to express a message that violates their core convictions.
So, Jack, the deal was, Colorado said, if you're going to sue us, we're suing you, and you said, well, I'm going to sue you for hostility. And they said, if you drop your case, we'll drop our case, right?
Yeah, they were so openly hostile to us that we were forced to. We had no
other
choice.
What did they do that was so hostile?
They compared my faith to slave owners and Holocaust. In this case, they called me a hater, just multiple things. And
what's amazing about it is the Supreme Court in the first case rebuked those statements, sternly condemned the commission. Mm-hmm. The commission then went out and again embraced those statements and said we should be more transparent about this religious hostility.
This is the Civil Rights Commission in
yes.
Colorado. Are you going to stay in Colorado? What's your message to them today?
Yeah, I plan on staying in Colorado the rest of my life. I've been there all my life. I love where I live and I love what I do. And now, after 7 years almost, I can get back to doing the work that I love.
All right, so Kristen, what does this mean? You alluded to how this is going to affect other cases in other states. How will this affect them? Will all of those lawsuits be dropped?
I think it sends a very strong message to government officials. They need to stop targeting people of faith because of their beliefs on very important issues. And in NIFLA, a Supreme Court decision this last term, the court again said governments can't force people mm-hmm. to say things that violate their convictions. Mm-hmm. So we're optimistic that constitutional rights will be protected no matter which way the political winds shift.
Jack, you've been under fire for 6.5 years. A lot of people don't agree with you. Would you do it all over again?
We would do it all over again because it's the right thing to do. You have to stand for your convictions, and every American should be free to live and work according to their conscience without fear of punishment from the government.
And Jack Phillips is exactly right. No American should have to live in fear of being punished by their own government for living according to their beliefs. And there was another really important bill held in committee this week in the Nebraska legislature on Thursday. The revenue heard LB 670 in committee to create greater school choice in Nebraska by implementing a scholarship tax credit specifically for low-income families. And this is really important because it's all about freedom and choice in education. And it was actually in Nebraska, a case from Nebraska, where the United States Supreme Court recognized for the first time that it is, quote, the natural duty of the parents to give their children education suitable to the situation in life. The court recognized that the U.S. Constitution protects the power of parents to control the education of their own. Today, however, Nebraska is ranked 49th, almost dead last in the entire country when compared to other states' parental education choices. We also remain one of just five states without publicly supported options for non-public education. In other words, Nebraska doesn't really have school choice. And I want to make very clear that this is not about public versus private schools. It's a simple fact that different kids have different needs, different students do better in different learning environments, and different families have different goals and desires for their child's education, and fundamentally, parents should have more control over their children's education than the government. Your zip code shouldn't be the determining factor in where your child is educated, because your future shouldn't be determined by your zip code or by your family's income. And LB 670 is about helping to correct this through opportunity scholarships. Opportunity scholarships are a critical means of helping low-income families get the best education of their choice for their children. LB 670 would enact a tax credit for private donations to nonprofit scholarship-granting organizations, which in turn provides scholarships to eligible students for use at non-public schools. Again, this is all about choice, so that more families and parents have the choice to send their children to the school that is best for them. If that's a public school, that's great. That's tremendous. If it's a private school, that's great too. And importantly, the bill does not divert any public money away from public schools. It's about incentivizing private dollars to be turned into private scholarships for low-income families. No public money away from public schools. And here's the other thing. In addition to providing greater freedom and choice in education for more families, opportunity scholarships have saved other states who have this same exact type of program billions of dollars. This would help the state of Nebraska save money. In 17 states overall, opportunity scholarships have saved $1.7 to $3.4 billion to date. Using private dollars to reduce the number of students the state needs to take care of and pay to educate will directly lead to substantial local and state savings. Take, for example, in Florida, who has been using tax credit scholarships for a long time. In Florida, there was a nonpartisan analysis from the Florida legislature's Office of Program Policy Analysis, and they found that for every dollar in educational tax credits offered, taxpayers saved $1.49 in education costs. Similarly, in Arizona, Arizona's Department of Revenue showed that opportunity scholarships were saving public schools over $240 million a year. And right next door in Iowa, opportunity scholarships have saved Iowa at least $280 million since their enactment in 2006. But again, this isn't just about dollars and the money. This is about children, the future of our country, and making sure that parents, regardless of their income, are really the ones who are in control of their child's education and truly have freedom and choice in the education that their child receives and where they receive it. And for many families, faith-based values are an essential part of their lives and want these values to be instilled in their children at school. And those values shouldn't only be reserved for the wealthy and those who can afford it. This diversity should be celebrated by allowing greater school choice options for parents through school choice. And right now, it is difficult for low-income families to have their children's educational needs met, and it's critical we bring school choice to Nebraska to help give parents the freedom to control the education of their own children. Private opportunity scholarships help meet this need and provide parents and students with the educational outcomes they desire. This is LB 670. The bill sponsor, Senator Lou Anne Linehan of Elkhorn, has already made it her one priority bill for the year, which means it's going to get debated by the full legislature. This is a really important opportunity in our state. So you can learn more information about LB 670 and all the bills we're working on at Nebraska Family Alliance over at our website, NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. And we hope that you will join us in advancing family, freedom, and life in Nebraska. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for Nebraska Family Alliance, hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.